Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On Mother's Day, May 8th, 2016, 34-year-old Chris Fowler set out on the Pacific Crest Trail, a 2,653-mile hike stretching from Mexico to Canada. Chris's journey took him through the desert of California, the heights of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and the thick forests of the Pacific Northwest. But on October 12th, with less than 400 miles to go on the trail, Chris, who had stopped in Packwood, Washington for supplies, set off to resume the PCT near White Pass in the Cascade Mountain Range with a storm moving in. People would later claim the storm was one of the biggest Washington State had experienced in decades. The storm was so intense that it brought snow to the high mountaintops of Mount Rainier and the surrounding area. As other hikers left the trail to wait for better weather, Chris set off into the dense Washington wilderness with the storm on his heels and seemingly vanished into the thick underbrush of the Pacific Northwest. This is the Missing and Unexplained podcast with me, Tyler Hooper.
And, I've never heard of it, but so I started researching and I started doing my own research and I could see him doing something like this. And so on May 8th, Mother's Day, he sent me a picture from the Pacific Crest Trail. It was his very first day on the trail. So happy Mother's Day from PCT. I love you. Here we go.
One of the first people to realize something was wrong with Chris in October of 2016 was his stepmother, Sally Fowler. Chris and Sally are incredibly close. When Chris decided to hike the PCT, Sally made Chris promise that he would check in with her every couple of weeks while on the trail. Sadly, Chris's biological mother passed away young, but when his stepmother Sally entered his life, she treated him like one of her own. Chris is an only child, so Sally took care of Chris while he was growing up. The two formed a very strong bond.
I met Chris when he was 10. I just started dating his dad, and his dad had full-time custody of him at the time, so he was around all the time, and we hit it right off, and we did a lot of stuff together, and eventually when he was 12 and his mom passed away, at 13, after he turned 13, his dad and I got married. And so, I've been in his life since he was 10, and I didn't have any other kids, and he didn't have, a living mom at the time. And so we filled each other's needs in that role, I guess, and we've always been really close. Yeah, he was born in, his dad was in the Navy, and his mom and dad lived in Norfolk, Virginia when he was born. His dad was active Navy at the time, and then his dad's family and his mom's family were both from the Dayton area, so they moved back here. He was a good kid. He didn't get in a lot of trouble. He did boy stuff, he still did stuff. Nothing super illegal, just dumb stuff that, boys do, outside and that kind of thing. He wasn't real mischievous, and he was pretty honest with us about stuff he did and where he was going, and he was always very determined in whatever it is he wanted. If he wanted a new bike, and we said, no, the bike you have is fine, and, you know, we don't want to buy a new bike yet. He was very creative in finding out how to sell things or trade things and then have enough money for this bike. You know, I remember him doing that when he was like 11. Just always very determined in getting something done that he had set his mind to, whether it be a purchase or a sport or whatever, a hobby he took on, whatever it is, he did it very well. He was a natural athlete. He was excellent at baseball. He was a really good baseball pitcher. We had people calling us from all over the place for him to be on their team at from a young age on. He played all the way through school, but he never played football. So one day when he was about 12, he came home, 11 maybe, and came home and said, "Hey, there's a punt, pass, and kick competition, and I want to do that." So it was nearby, and we took him there, and he won. And then he won the next round, and he won the next round, and he ended up going to the Cincinnati Bengals football stadium during a pro game where they had the semifinals. And he lost there to another young man who was, just some real big kid in his age group. He barely lost, but he lost to this kid. But he went all that way, and he never even played football, but he just was really good with whatever hand and eye coordination thing required a ball. And he did that 2 years in a row.
Jeff France met Chris while playing football with him in grade 7. They weren't the closest of friends at first, but eventually Chris and Jeff developed a strong connection over their love of sports, and a subsequent friendship bloomed. Jeff says he has fond memories of going on trips with Chris, meeting girls, and getting into a little bit of trouble.
Oh my gosh, so I'll never forget it. Seventh grade, it was after school, so we were playing football, and it was at practice. I remember meeting this new kid, and I was playing kind of like a wide receiver position, and I knew, you know, Chris was tall, lanky. I mean, he was 6 foot tall in seventh grade, and he had these red shoes on. And I'm like, oh, gosh, he looked like a California surfer. And like, you know, I'm like, who's this new kid? Like, my spot's going to get taken. Like, I'm not going to catch any footballs. This kid's going to take it all. But, yeah, I just very vividly remember that first practice that he showed up. And I thought he was just going to kind of be this tall football jerk jock. And he was all of those things. But he was also very very down to earth once I got to know him. And I really got to know him better once we got around to baseball season. We were not super close at the very beginning. I think that where we really probably became the closest is once we got around to baseball season. The seventh and eighth grade team was a combined team, and there was only 4 seventh graders that made the team. Myself and Chris were one of them. So naturally, that kind of being, you know, kind of the low men on the totem pole, so to speak, we just kind of naturally became closer at that time. He was also a pitcher. I was a catcher. So we just spent a lot of time together in just a very organic fashion. And so once baseball season rolled around and we both made the team as seventh graders, we became a lot closer and faster friends. Oh, my gosh. So there was one year, it was our sophomore year of high school, and actually our school was under construction at the time. So we had to change classes outside, which in Ohio, hit or miss, could be good weather, could be bad weather. Well, Chris and Sally's stepmom had gotten the bright idea, because Chris was this pretty boy, that he was going to do these modeling shoots, right? And so Chris came to school wearing this, like, turtleneck, hair slicked back, like, and I was just giving him the business for as every time I passed him in what we called the cattle run, because it was this fenced off area that we had to change classes in. And oh my gosh, I was just giving him such a hard time. But obviously part of our friendship was giving each other a hard time and dishing it and taking it. And so that was a pretty funny memory. But another funny memory that I really look fondly on is, we would go on trips together with each other's families. And one summer my parents had taken us we went out kind of towards the Virginia Beach area. Well, we spent some time at Virginia Beach, and As weird as this was, but we would like, I just remember very fondly of rollerblading up and down the boardwalk. We did that in the evenings a lot of times. And, we went to, Busch Gardens and at the time we also went to, Colonial Williamsburg. And I don't know that a person has ever been more bored in their life than Chris was at Colonial Williamsburg. But as he grew older, I think that he probably had some appreciation because he got very into, I don't know about history, but he just he became much more into things that he maybe wasn't at a younger age, just teenage angst kind of, you know, too good for, you know, Colonial Williamsburg. But we had a lot of good memories on that trip. You know, we were 15, 16 at the time, you know, meeting girls on the beach, meeting girls at Busch Gardens. He definitely had a way with the ladies as a very, very young guy. And, that was that, you know, whenever we go to Kings Island, it was, Chris was definitely motivated by a pretty lady. So, those were just, I mean, yeah, we had so many good times, but those are just a couple nuggets from kind of that time frame that I, that stick out. So actually, I mean, when around the time, our goal was to go play baseball together somewhere in college. We visited a lot of schools together. We visited Bowling Green. We visited Wilmington. We visited a couple different smaller schools where we thought maybe we could play baseball together. I think Chris probably could have had more of a future in baseball. You know, for whatever reason, we just kind of naturally, I don't want to say grew out of it because we both loved baseball quite a bit, but we both kind of decided on, hey, there's a university pretty close to our hometown. I mean, it's basically in Fairborn, Ohio, again, another adjacent suburb to Beaver Creek, Wright State is where we both landed, and we both attempted to walk onto the baseball team, kind of did some work in the fall with the fall ball team. And
as Chris made his way through Wright State University, primarily studying business and marketing, he relished in the experience. As Jeff says, they probably partied more than they studied. After briefly living together, Jeff says Chris met a young woman, fell in love, and soon became married. According to Sally, as Chris catapulted into adulthood, he, like a lot of us, began to change.
He didn't change. He changed after college, I think. But going through college, he was in a fraternity, and he lived the whole college experience. It took him about 6 years to get through college because he was working full-time most of the time. I always had a job. He was, you know, always had a job. He was a normal college guy, liked to party and have fun, but he was still getting the work and the job done and everything. And then he met a lady in college, and he actually asked her to marry him at my house during his graduation, or their graduation party. They both graduated.
We probably had a little too much fun. School was not a top priority for either of us. It was, what can we do to have some fun? And, oh, by the way, we got this class thing that we got going on, and when we go. But we both managed to get our degrees and make something of ourselves for a little bit. But, I mean, some of just the absolute hilarity that we got into spring break trips, one really hilarious story. We're on spring break. Chris probably had a few too many adult beverages, decided he was going to kick a pop machine, a soda machine, and broke his foot. So everybody's asleep in this hotel room. You know, you got six guys in a four-person room, and it's just spring break in college, Panama City Beach. And he's banging on the door. Nobody wants to get up and let him in. And it's, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and he's got this broken foot, and he's hobbling in, and he's like, he ends up, you know, flying home the next day. And that's another thing we gave him quite a bit of grief about, because we're like, guy, you throw a boot on and you sit on the beach and you get all this sympathy. You'd have had a great time. And
hello, nerds. Come listen to the History Nerds United podcast and let's make history fun again. We interview today's best authors, whether they are established Pulitzer Prize winners or someone debuting their first book. Let us show you that history is not a boring class you took in high school, but a place where the best stories come from. And we don't just cover history. We also love to chat about true crime, biographies, memoirs, and so much more. So head on over to History Nerds United and let us introduce you to your new favorite book and learn the story behind the story.
History Nerds United.
So, around the time we both graduated, we actually lived together for a little bit at his dad's house. So his dad owned the house that they kind of grew up in Beaver Creek. And his dad had moved into a condo, but kept that house and was going to rent it out. And then Chris kind of lived there. And so, you know, I had gone through right out of college. I was hired, to work as a home builder. And that was right at the beginning of the financial crisis around that time, the recession and home market went, you know, down the tubes. And so they let go like half of our, you know, building staff. So here I was, back at a point where I'm like, oh, well, I guess I better go back to bartending. And you know, I don't even remember what he did for work at the time, but it was just that post-college kind of hanging out, trying to figure out what you do want to do with your life. And he was dating Jen at the time. So it was, you know, we were kind of like Three's Company there, but it was just good kind of, I wouldn't call it a bachelor pad by any means, but you know, it was cool getting to spend some of that time together too. So, that was a time when we actually did start to get a little closer. You know, he was in a sales career that he wasn't really loving. I actually got him hired at the company that I worked at. And it wasn't but 2 weeks, and he was like, man, I'm just, corporate America is not for me anymore. And I was like, where's this coming from? Like, you are corporate America. So it was very strange, but I remember at the time, I mean, I was very close to his wife, Jen, too. I mean, and, you know, there was conversations that she and I had, like, hey, you know, can you help me talk to him? Can you help, you know, what's going on? So it was a tough time because they were, even though I think we're always trying to evolve and figure out who we are and sometimes our interests and our goals and our desires change. And that definitely happened for Chris. I think that there were some catalysts to that within the relationship, but I think that, you know, as he became more interested in being very involved in the outdoors, he started to try some new things that were, you know, passion projects that were not about money for him. I think that it was definitely more about happiness and wanting to feel fulfilled. And ultimately I think that's kind of what, you know, kind of grew them apart was that, she kind of still wanted, you know, the white picket fence family. And he was like, let's go on an adventure. And so, you can see where that, you know, might not create an environment that would be conducive to a lot of success as a couple. But when they did kind of eventually go their separate ways, he had moved in with his dad a little bit back up this way, and I got to run into him at our, you know, local Moose Lodge, and I would see him from time to time, and being a rider.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Around the block, I'd invite him over for dinner. He didn't always take us up on that, but, you know, I wanted to try to see him as much as I could. And I remember him mentioning this trail, and I had no idea what it was at the time. Had never seen the movie Wild, which a lot of people talk about. I have now, actually. I forced myself to watch it just to see what it was like. And that was its own emotional experience. But I think that it came on very quickly. He had maybe been talking to Colin and obviously Mike and Sally about wanting to take on, you know, this adventure. But I would have probably put it on, yeah, he's blowing smoke. He might go out there and do a little bit and then we'll see him back here in Ohio pretty soon, and maybe he'll get out of the system. But no, he's also very stubborn, and when he puts his mind to something, he's going to see it through. Or or the other eyes.
Chris's motivation behind wanting to hike the PCT isn't entirely clear. As Jeff and Sally both told me, he was at a bit of a crossroads in his life. His marriage was falling apart, and he was heading towards divorce. He wasn't fulfilled in his career, and he was seemingly a little adrift or lost in his own life. He may have even felt trapped.
His job that he had moved to Florida, and he could have stayed with the company, but he didn't. It wasn't their future wasn't bright, so he didn't think it'd be a wise move. So this all happened at the same time he was getting divorced, so he didn't have a job at the time, and he moved in with his dad, and he decided, I don't have a lot of bills. I got a little money in the bank, and nothing's holding me back. Just got this divorce. I'm going to go hike the Pacific Crest Trail. His dad's reaction was, you know, get a job at a 401k and it's a vacation time. What are you doing? But so just because that's how our lives were, you know, we both always worked. I wasn't crazy about it, but after I talked to him, the very first time I talked to him about it, he had such a plan. He was so excited about it. It's the first time I'd heard him be really excited about anything in a long time. You know, I'd gone through a divorce, which is never easy, and I could just tell that he had it all figured out, and the only thing he was a grown man. The only thing I could do was support him. So I did. Happy for him. I didn't understand it, because it's just not something, you know, it's just a little foreign to people in Ohio. That he was a very good disc golfer, obviously, because he was, I say obviously, because he was good at whatever he did. It was hand and eye coordination. So anyway, he had been visiting him every year. He went to go visit this guy in Colorado and for the past several years and hiked with him. And that guy was doing the Pacific Crest Trail. So Chris moved out there and started training.
One of the catalysts for Chris actually following through with hiking the PCT was meeting Colin Hurley. As Sally mentioned, Colin and Chris met playing disc golf. As Chris and Colin started hanging out together and hiking, they realized they had quite a bit in common. The two men even bonded over their experiences of going through a divorce. Chris brought up the idea of doing an epic hike to get away and into the woods. As Colin says, the seed was planted and the two of them started to prepare to hike the PCT together.
Yeah, so it's kind of a crazy thing. I mean, in 2015, I had gotten a divorce, and later that same year, he actually got a divorce too. And so, you know, we both kind of struggled with that idea, and it was, you know, we're both we're both pretty introverted people for the most part, or at least we've internalized a lot of stuff, and so, you know, having him to kind of bounce ideas off and thoughts off about the whole divorce situation was really helpful. And I remember one of the very first things he told me asked me when I told him about my divorce was like, he's like, oh, so hey, would you, you know, want to get out of town and just go hike a long trail or something like that? And, you know, at the time I was just like, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, you know, I like backpacking. I like all that kind of stuff, but I never really thought about the idea of doing something that took so much planning and so much preparation and really such a huge chunk of time. But yeah, as it turned out, I was self-employed and really I didn't see why I couldn't leave to do something like that. And so the idea, that seed he planted in my head kind of grew for me. And we actually didn't really talk about it a ton more. He kind of went off and did his own thing for a while, and I hadn't talked to him for maybe a couple months. I assumed he was still thinking about doing the trail, but, you know, in late 2015, I was kind of well into making plans and preparations for doing that. And I left him a couple messages to see if he was still thinking about doing it. And, I actually didn't even know where he was working or anything at the time. And like all of a sudden, kind of out of the blue, I got a phone call from him in, I want to say it was like January of 2016. He's like, oh, hey, I'm doing some like remodeling or construction work in Wyoming. And I was like, what, really? Like, you know, last I knew, he was living in Ohio, you know, just kind of getting through his, getting over his divorce and everything. And so to hear that, and I was like, oh wow, you're working out here. He's like, yeah, we're still doing the trail. Like, sure, yeah, I'm planning on it. I didn't know what, you know, what you were wanting to do, but yeah, for sure. And kind of the way it worked out, since I lived in Colorado and he was out working in Wyoming, I let him crash at the place that I was renting for, oh man, I guess it was about a month or something. And we just started, prepping for the trip together, purchasing our gear and kind of bouncing ideas off one another. And, you know, since I was self-employed and did, kind of manual labor type stuff, like, handyman type. Type things. I brought him along for some of the jobs, and we tried to earn some money for the trip together. And so, yeah, again, we just sort of planned for at least a month, I think it was, together, just living in Colorado and going out on training hikes with some friends of ours. A good friend, Laura, was there, and she wanted to get out and hike. And I know she had a lot of conversations with Chris about the trail. And so, yeah, we just kind of, things were sort of all coming together. And it just seemed like, I don't know, the universe was like, all right, you're going to, you know, do this trail together, at least start out together. I think we, in the beginning, we said, hey, we're going to hike our own hike here. As they say on the trail, you got to kind of do your own speed and your own, have your own adventure. So I know a lot of people plan on hiking it with another person, and other people just plan on making it their own. And as far as I recall, we were planning on, you know, at least starting out together, and we didn't really have a plan as far as how long we were going to hike together for, though.
Colin says that he had experience backpacking and hiking on multi-day trips, but the idea of being on a trail for months at a time seemed daunting. Colin began to prep, almost obsessively, and thoroughly planned out the logistics of the trip and his gear. Chris had also spent a lot of time hiking and camping in the outdoors, but both men had different ways of preparing for this epic adventure, something Colin thinks about to this day.
You know, I have been backpacking since I was a teenager, so I was 40 years old at the time when I did the PCT. So you know, better part of 25 years I had been backpacking, and so I hadn't done more than about a week or 10 day trip. So I you know, that part was a little daunting. I wasn't sure how to really take that. I mean, the PCT is, you know, 5-6 months, depending on how long you're planning on being out there and how fast you are, and, you know, kind of the way that you hike your hike. But I guess I wasn't too worried about that. I did a ton of preparation. I looked at a lot of different websites. I got the Yogi's Through Hiking book, and, you know, just did a ton of preparation for it. And, you know, in reading all these different sources, I guess the best way the hike was explained to me was, you know, the PCT is really just a series of like 3 to 5 day backpacking trips, essentially, just all strung together. You know, maybe up to, you know, I can't remember what the longest stretch I was without a resupply, but maybe like 7 days or something at the very most. So, you know, essentially you're coming into a town and you're resupplying, getting a shower and getting cleaned up and getting a nice meal, you know, every few days. So it's essentially just like having a bunch of little backpacking trips all strung together. So that's what gave me comfort anyway. So I'm like, oh, okay, I think I can handle this. You know, I've done plenty of little, you know, 3 to 5 day backpacking trips, and you know, I have no hesitation about that. So yeah, it was really just, I guess, the, you know, more frustrating part of it, and the hardest part of it was wrapping my mind around just packing up and leaving for, you know, half of a year, and getting all the, you know, money preparation and stuff like that. But I guess once things started flowing and I started, you know, purchasing gear, and I made a spreadsheet of the weight of all the gear and all that kind of stuff, like, once all that started flowing together, it was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. I am doing this, you know, I'm getting ready for it. I will say, like, and you know, everybody does things differently, but Chris kind of had a different strategy, if you will, when it came to preparing. He kind of did like everything, I will say, like last minute, because essentially I don't know that he did much of any reading or purchasing of much of any gear before he came to Colorado to stay with me. And at that point, I know he was, you know, purchasing all the backpacking gear and printing off some maps and stuff like that. But I don't think his preparation definitely wasn't like as you know, thorough as mine or some other folks that I had met along the trail. But again, I'm sure there are people out there that did the exact same thing he did, and just sort of not really an impulsive thing, but like I think, you know, he genuinely wanted to do it, but I don't know that he wanted to go through all the prep work of doing it. But I tried to, you know, basically just give him as much of my knowledge as possible from the years of backpacking that I've done, and all the things that I was reading about ultralight gear and stuff like that. And so that was sort of my impression, like starting into the hike, like it didn't seem like he had prepared quite as much for what was about to come. But I knew like physically he was in good shape and everything, so and he's got a good head on his shoulders, so I didn't see like any issue with you know, with what he was doing. So it was just something more I noticed, because I tend to, you know, overplan stuff sometimes. You know, I thought maybe I'm overplanning a little bit, and you know, didn't really think about too much about his underplanning until, you know, things sort of fell apart for him. You know, later on when I found out that he went missing, I was like, oh, shoot. I started thinking back to all that kind of stuff and thought, well, maybe he wasn't as prepared as, you know, and maybe that was more of a big deal than I was thinking in the beginning.
As Sally mentioned before, she didn't really understand why Chris wanted to hike the PCT. But after talking with them, she realized this was something he really wanted to do. He was prepping and training and getting ready to take on this big adventure. Chris and Colin arranged to start the trail in May. It just so happened that the day they set off to embark on more than a 2,500-mile journey was Mother's Day.
I wasn't crazy about it, but after I talked to him, the very first time I talked to him about it, he had such a plan. He was so excited about it. It's the first time I'd heard him be really excited about anything in a long time. You know, I'd gone through a divorce, which is never easy. And so it was, I could just tell that he had it all figured out. And the only thing he was a grown man. The only thing I could do was support him. So I did. Happy for him. I didn't understand it, because it's just not something, you know, it's just a little foreign to people in Ohio. And, you know, I've never heard of it. But so I started researching, and I started doing my own research, and I could see him doing something like this. And so on May 8th, Mother's Day, he sent me a picture from the Pacific Crest Trail. It was his very first day on the trail. He said, Happy Mother's Day from BCT, I love you. Here we go.
On the next episode of the Missing and Unexplained podcast.
How did you get the trail name?
So I got the trail name Sherpa when I was coming through the town of Idlewild. And there was a couple of other hikers just come straggling through into town and looking kind of weary. So started talking to them and was telling them where the restaurants were and where the grocery store was. And I saw them again later in town. They said, there's our Sherpa. So it just kind of stuck.
If you know anything about Chris's disappearance, please contact the Yakima County Sheriff's Office at 509-574-2500. Or message Chris's stepmother, Sally Guyton Fowler, on Facebook. For those of you who have subscribed to the Patreon, thank you. If you haven't, please consider checking it out and supporting the podcast. I'm also donating 25% of all Patreon funds to the Fowler O'Sullivan Foundation until August 1st. As always, thanks for listening to the Missing and Unexplained podcast with me, Tyler Hooper.